Hey everyone, Chris here, one of your hosts of the Wandering Road podcast. I just wanted to give a quick preface with today's episode, since the topic we will be discussing with our guest is a sensitive one. I want to reiterate that what is discussed by our guest are their opinions on the subject matter. Dean and I are not subject matter experts by any stretch of the imagination. We enjoy providing commentary and good content for our listeners, so listener discretion is advised. With that being said, I hope you enjoy today's show. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Wandering Road podcast. I'm your host Chris, alongside my co-host Dean, and for today's show, we have one of our first listeners slash guests on the show, demonologist Will. But before we get started with today's show, if you'd like to be on the show, like Will is today, please reach out to us at twroadpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to have you on the show as a guest, so please reach out to us at twroadpodcast@gmail.com. And with that, folks, we'll start today's show. How are we doing today, guys?
I don't know. We'll find out because we recorded about 30 minutes beforehand before we did this again, and we might have lost a lot of content, so we're kind of starting from scratch. So let's see how this one goes. How are you doing, Will? Part two, take two.
I'm doing good. Doing good.
Yeah, that was kind of odd. When Will came back on, I was like, dude, it's the demons not wanting him to tell his story. But Will, let's take it from the top. Why don't you share with us your earliest paranormal experiences?
My earliest experiences happened when I was about 9. I grew up in a house that was haunted, and it was on a farm. And where our house was is where the slave's home used to be. So I could see, like, I would say one apparition of one of the slaves walking through our walls, because anytime I would see it, it was always the same one. That went on for years, and then when I was 14, in the same house, I had an uncle move in with his wife and two kids, and their son was in my bedroom, who was one, who ended up possessed. And then we had to have a priest come over and perform an exorcism after some things, and that really just broadened my view even more. That's what got me into this whole field.
Yeah, that's super fascinating, and I guess it's kind of a blessing in disguise that we get take two with this, because I did have some more questions as about that. But I think we can touch on really quickly. I thought it was super interesting from the first recording, and it might feel forced to do it again, but I do want the listeners to know more about what you experienced at a young age. And I think one of the first questions I had for you that you kind of answered already, can you talk briefly about the interesting aspects of your first apparition that you saw? So you were 9 years old. Can you describe what you saw, and how did it interact with you, if at all? Was it anything out of the ordinary that you had ever heard of about ghosts in the past, or was it kind of like more engaging to you?
Well, I never heard of any of this at that point. It was something we didn't talk about in the house. And the apparition was of a slave woman. You could see the face, the body, the dress, the apron, the bonnet, everything perfectly. It was just in a shade of blue. Did not acknowledge that I was there at all. She just went about her business. And then growing up and learning more about this, I would say it was a residual haunting, which is on a loop, just replaying itself over and over and over again. And that's kind of why they go through walls, if you want to say, because what she was walking through, going through our walls, could have been her actual hallway of the house that could have been in that spot at that time.
Wow, that's actually super interesting. I was actually thinking about something like that when you were talking. And one of the things we brought up in the last recording that we lost was, so you had mentioned that there was some mineral or some kind of like fresh water source running underneath the house or the land. And Chris and I had never heard of that before, but you were talking about how residual hauntings might be driven a lot by the energy that was given off by not just a person, but the field around the location that that person occupied when they were alive. And I had never thought of that. That's really interesting. So can you talk a little bit more to that? Like, what kind of things do you think, what kind of aspects about the land and the house that you think were aiding in the increased presence of a residual haunting, which is kind of, like we said, just a movie playing out, not an actual soul, not an actual person that is moving and looking. It's just like a movie playing out in real life.
So the further I go into the field, the more I'm actually still learning today. I have found out that different minerals in the soil help with hauntings. I would love to actually get a test done of the soil on that land to see what all is in it. Fresh flowing underwater streams are a big factor in hauntings, as well as, I'll just go ahead and throw these out there. We didn't have any of this on the land, but like a copper roof are flowing iron. So like railroad tracks. And as much as it sounds like it's from Supernatural, it's actually whoever did all the research for Supernatural did their job really well, because railroad tracks is actually a good conductor for spiritual activity as well.
That's so crazy. I like, this is a whole, now you got me going, like I got to do research on this too. Cause like, I feel like if I ever wanted to write a novel or something, I better like learn, like know this kind of thing. Cause this is so interesting. That actually helps the dynamic of a story. So let's Chris, I don't want to steal the thunder. Did you have anything, other questions that you had from the last recording that you wanted to bring up about the early childhood before we get into the exorcism?
No, I don't. I actually was going to segue into that, but if you want to,
no, I'm good, man.
Continue down that path.
Yeah, we can totally.
By all means, go ahead.
Yeah, let's
transition to that.
Okay, cool. So yeah, so your formative years, you're 9 years old. You started seeing residual hauntings, and I think, I don't know if you brought it up in this recording, but the last recording you had said that you tried to raise it to your grandparents, and they just did not buy it. They're like, oh, it's just your imagination. So even though you were raised in a very religious household, you still had family members who just did not want to hear any of that, did not see any of that, did not experience it, which I find fascinating. I brought this up last time, but I think that, in my opinion, and maybe you could talk to this because you might have come across this in your research, but I always wondered that, like, when we're in our early lives, wherever our energy comes from, wherever the awareness, the consciousness, if it's not just solely from the brain, like some, you know, scientists would argue that consciousness stems only from the physical mechanics of the brain. But if there really is a soul or a spirit or something that is attached to us, I always had to imagine that that must come to us at some point, either from, you know, the inception of life, or like when we first come out of the womb or whatever, or maybe even a year after we are on the earth, maybe we get some kind of spark of energy or something. So I always wondered, maybe there really is something to children seeing these things. And unfortunately, a lot of adults just play it off as, oh, just imagination, which kids also have in spades. So it's kind of like this thing, you know, like you can't really be sure if it's imagination or if they're really seeing something. But have you come across anything in your research to suggest that children are much more of a conduit for such things? And if so, why do you think they're like that?
I actually, this is my own perspective. I believe we are all born with gifts and talents, kind of like that sixth sense thing going on. But it's who our parents are that kind of turn it off. Like with my grandparents, they raised me. They kept telling me it was my imagination. I did not believe them. So I kept going into it. Most kids will believe their parents and be like, okay, maybe it is my imagination. And they shut that part of their selves down, that part of their brain or whatever. So they disconnect themselves from what we all are born into, being able to see and hear and everything.
Yeah. That's, my gosh, that's actually hitting home for me, because I've never shared this before, but one of the earliest memories I have from my childhood is seeing like an orb of light, in the corner of a room. And I think I could completely be, you know, injected this memory when I was young, and like imagining things, and maybe just stuck as a core memory and it's not real. But I have this really strong memory about being basically, I think I was younger than two. One of my first memories, looking in the corner of a room, seeing a bright glowing orb of light. And I think that was like one of the first memories I could ever think back on. But let's actually explore that for a second, because that's something we never talked about. It might be interesting. Do you guys have an absolute earliest memory in your childhood, like going back even all the way back to even your first year of life, if you have anything, like if you really reach hard, is there anything that pops up in your core memory from the very first time you had a thought that is registered that you remember today?
With me, I don't trust my memory past what I remember at 9. I have memories of things that I think I've seen, but I do chalk those up to my imagination because those things were dark and scary. But also, it also could have been the dark and scary side, knowing what I was going to grow up into being, that was like already showing itself to me. Because I always tell people, if you're looking online and you're looking for a demonologist and everything, if they say that they're certified or stuff like that, they're not real. A true demonologist is called into this. They don't choose to do it. It's chosen for them.
Yeah, that's super fascinating. I have never heard that. I've never even heard of people trying to claim having that. So I actually will keep that in mind. Chris, do you have anything to add about like your earliest memory or your earliest core memory of like anything supernatural or strange happening?
Oh, yeah, definitely. What really resonated with me, Will, was what you said, how, you know, you would tell your grandparents and whatnot in your family, like, hey, I saw this stuff. And they'd be like, no, it's just your imagination. I kind of experienced that as well with some family members. So one example is we would hear like really heavy footsteps in the attic, like straight up like army boots, what it sounded like, just stomping back and forth in the attic. And when we would bring it up, they would just say it's like squirrels running back and forth or pigeons, unless the pigeons were wearing Timberland boots, because I grew up in New York. I don't think that would be the case. But yeah, I felt that on a personal level. And I don't know about you, but it's like a feeling of, as a kid, just like helplessness. It's like, I'm not lying to you, but you don't believe me. And I know you can hear it too. So like, what is the point of you not acknowledging what's going on so we could figure out how to either fix it or either get the hell out of here? But what I wanted to ask you was, in one of my previous episodes, I think it might have been episode 34, my friend Aaron and I, we titled the episode the Theology of Demons. And we kind of talked about demons when they appear in certain religious texts. The reason we talked about that topic is because, you know, there are certain groups within like the Christian faith that don't acknowledge that the dark side even exists. And I say dark side like it's Star Wars or something. but they refuse to acknowledge it, whether it be out of fear, whether it be out of a lack of understanding. In one of the texts, it like in the Bible itself, it says that Jesus casted out legion into like a herd of pigs, and then they just threw themselves off of a cliff. And it's like, okay, how can you say like, okay, I read the Bible, I'm a devout follower, but I'm going to not acknowledge this thing that Jesus himself did, which was kind of exercising demons. So I wanted your perspective of, I know it's a very long-winded question, but I wanted your perspective on why you think that is, that certain groups, you know, will be strong believers in Christianity, but for some reason, the devil and demons don't exist.
To me, it's fear. How scary is it knowing something that dark is actually there and could come after you at any given time, and you can't see it, you can't feel it, you can't, sometimes can't even hear it. So it's just one of those, if I ignore it, it'll go away type things, you know?
Which I always thought, like, maybe, I think there actually might be something to that, because I know Chris and I had joked about this in previous recordings, but it's like, how do you deal with the situation? And some people actually do that. Like, what, you see a ghost and it's engaging with you. A lot of people just say, ignore it, and it'll go away. And I know that's not always true, but I always imagine, like, if you just play it off as nothing interesting, then maybe the apparition will be like, oh, this, it's not worth my time, because this person isn't going to, I'm not going to get the reaction from this person that I'm trying to get. So that'd be interesting to get someone's perspective who has dealt with hauntings, but they are so numb to it that they just kind of ignore it. Cause like you said, like we were talking about residual hauntings, like, so residual hauntings, as we were saying, is just an imprint of someone's energy moving through space time, and it's like a movie playing out. So there's nothing actually there that is conscious that could engage with you. Yet there's also stories of like things like poltergeists that actually can focus on you and do have some kind of like free flowing thought or decision making to either engage with you or pass over you or whatever. I wonder how someone would go about telling the difference. And does it help just knowing that if you're paying attention to it, then you're giving it more power than to come after you? So if you just ignore it, maybe there is something to that. I don't know.
From my studies, I actually have a book on poltergeist, and they're actually almost like a dark tulpa. Most poltergeist cases are created whenever somebody is just angry all the time and stuff. They create a angry spirit. That's why most poltergeist cases, they're slamming, they're throwing, there's stuff like that. It's just angry. And most of the time, once that person gets help, like psychological help, that goes away.
Yeah, that's actually, honestly, I don't know what's scarier, the idea of a poltergeist being a separate entity that can do things to you or around you, or the fact that you are out of control of yourself enough that you can manifest through anger and all this stuff, like something that can hurt other people or even come, they like reflect, like kind of like shooting a bullet in a metal room or something like that. It's going to ricochet around and you might get hit by your own bullet that you fired. Yeah, that's really terrifying. I never thought of that. So another aspect of your life, Will, that really is fascinating to me, and we kind of touched on it in the last recording. I'm trying to remember all of the interesting things we talked about because they kind of just came organically. But do you want to talk about the instance of the exorcism and how that, because that also happened to you at a very young age, but it was also much more of an intense experience than just seeing apparitions. And you can even throw in, I know you had a story about being locked in a room, presumably by an entity that had control or able to, like, you know, it wasn't just a residual haunting. You were physically locked in a room by something. So can you just touch on those two stories and feel free to kind of go off and just tell us how you felt and how it really formed your youth?
Yeah. So with the room, I didn't mention on our first recording, I actually had a friend staying the night with me that night. And, it was just a spare bedroom in the house. It was my uncle's room. And after he moved out, it just kind of, we put a bed in there, and this is where we kept all our books, like our encyclopedias. It's before the internet and all that. But we decided to go in that room and sleep. And I was in the bed, he was on the floor, and we heard something outside the room. And we go to look and we can't open the door, and there's no doorknob, no mechanics that should be able to keep this door shut. We just pulling on it and everything else. We can't open this door. And this door has never been one to stick shut or anything like that. And actually, the only way we got out was to open the window. And I jumped out of the window, came around the house, and living back in the woods, we really didn't lock our doors back in the 90s and stuff either. Door just pushed open when I came in from the outside of it.
Oh my gosh, that sounds terrifying. Go ahead, Chris.
So aside from the residual hauntings, you'd think there was something more nefarious in that location?
I wouldn't have been for sure. I still think about it, like in my adult life, like, was there something nefarious there pre exorcism, before all that stuff happened? I also wonder if it was me delving more into this that was creating, like I said earlier, a darker type entity. But then, just to jump into the exorcism, that happened when my uncle got kicked out of the military. So he moved in with us with his, like I said, his wife and two kids. They put their son in my bedroom. Every time we would go to church, his wife would stay behind. She, what we found out years later, was practicing black magic while we were all gone and did not know what she was doing.
What?
Yeah. And I think that's what led up to her son being possessed, but also the fact that she really didn't like her son. Every time he'd cry at night, she was just numb to him. Showed no emotion whatsoever. She only cared about her daughter. That was the only child she
could. This is probably like crazy speculation because I've watched too many horror movies and watched, oh God, what was that? I think it was Annabelle, where like the couple like lived in an apartment and then like the monster, the demon attached to Annabelle, like tried to take the baby. Do you think, like, leading up to the events you're going to talk about, her practicing black magic and doing everything incorrectly, or maybe it was one of those cases she knew what she was doing and just didn't care, you think it was a possibility that she might have offered up her son just to get rid of him?
JJ actually asked me that too. after he asked me that, I was like, you know, it's a possibility. It could have been. It very well could have been. Maybe she didn't know what she was doing. She just told all of us when she finally admitted it that she didn't know, just to be saved.
Yeah, maybe it got like too hot and heavy for her. But the other thing I want to poke at a little bit that you might not know, you probably don't know the answer to this, but I mean, black magic to me is an awfully blanket term. So it's, I mean, you answered part of the question already, which is how did you find out about it? And it sounds like she openly admitted it. So I apologize. It's like a sensitive subject because I know you guys are believers and stuff. And I still consider myself agnostic. But when I, like, if you go back historically speaking, you have like Wiccan, which is within the house of, you know, what some people call witchcraft. And so a lot of people, witchcraft is evil, black magic or whatever. And, but we do know that like Wicca was, I think stemmed off of paganism. And we know historically that the Catholic Church tried really hard to oust other religions. And I know JJ is probably going to slap me in the face for this because I think he said the paganism was such a small footnote in the history of Catholicism. But if you go back and look at, say, like Wicca or Wiccan or whatever that some people think is just pure black magic today, like evil stuff, it's actually a lot of like the religion is actually not evil. It's just another, you know, it's just another belief system about how energy works in the universe. And a lot of traditional Wiccans believe in beauty and life and rejuvenation. And then, you know, I think it's kind of polytheism. But do you think that she tried to do something like that? Or do you think that she really did try to focus purely on dark entities and then just got way in over her head?
Yep. Black magic is purely dark. Okay. And I do think it went way over her head. In the Wiccan community, there's different types of quote unquote magic. So there's like white magic, which deals with like protection and stuff like that. Green magic, which is like the earth and stuff. And if anybody's out there Wiccan, please don't yell at me for this. This was just what's all explained to me by somebody in the field that I was dating that was Wiccan. Then there's like gray, who's kind of in the middle of good and bad. And like the black magic is strictly like, I'm going to create this goblin or something to come after you and harm you and stuff like that.
Yeah, I guess, well, it's kind of like Chris's tarot card reading and Ouija board riffs when he talks, he gets so upset about it. Like, you know, you mess with shit you don't know.
I do. It's so true. Like, even in that case, like, that is a prime example of messing with shit that you don't understand. Because there's nothing in this world that is free. And the same, to me, applies to the spiritual, especially when you're messing with demons and black magic and all that shit, that nothing comes for free. There is always a cost. And like they always say, you gotta pay the piper at some point, right?
Right.
The devil's gonna get his due.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's always that case. I know Dean, like, he always like, dude, calm down. We're going to lose listeners. But it's like, it's one of those things. It's like, I'm saying it because not because I hate those things. I actually find those things fascinating. But it's like, okay, like, don't pretend to know what you're doing. And you're on TikTok. Well, Dean, I'm sure you have TikTok as well. And you come across these people that pretend to know what they're doing when it comes to stuff like that. And it's like, dude, you're going to get so many people into so much shit and they're going to have all this bad luck and they're not going to know what's going on. And it's like, oh, okay, well, shit just doesn't work out for me or some shit like that, or bad things just keep happening. It's because, no, you're listening to these fucking morons that don't have an expertise in this type of stuff. Like, I know someone that is, I would call her an expert tarot card reader. And she gets really, really pissed off at these tarot card TikTokers and these social media fads. Like, someone that has never delved into spirituality or crystals or Wicca or anything like that. And then suddenly at 45 years old, they have this fucking awakening and they're all pulling cards.
Crystals and shit.
They're, and shit, right? Like, no. I'm sorry. That's not how it fucking works. But I'll digress before I keep ranting.
I gotta share. You actually just reminded me of something from my childhood, and this is going to be so fucking sad. But, you know, we all did stupid shit when we were younger. Like I mentioned on past podcasts, like, and not to, let me just hold on asterisks. I'm not going to piss off any communities. I did hang out with the goth kids, not saying that anyone, if you're still goth or practice or whatever, like you're, you know, no shade, but the goth kids in the school at that time were not really good kids. They did some really shady, bad stuff. And, you know, I tried to kind of like dabble in that as well. And actually one thing that Chris, you just reminded me of from my childhood that I completely forgot about. There was a brief time where I was interested in like spells and stuff like that. Cause when you're a kid, like, you know, we all grew up around the time of like Harry Potter and stuff like that. Like you know, it's just in the mantra of society and like just curiosity about it. I have this vivid memory now that popped into my head where I was looking online for different kinds of like spells and incantations and stuff. And there was one, like I was obsessed with superpowers because, you know, who isn't obsessed with superpowers when you're younger? And I really wanted to like be able to become invisible, like go between invisibility and coming back, like, you know, go back and forth. And I think I said a spell or something I found on the internet to become invisible. And I remember like my childhood was not a happy one. I was kind of a nerd and no one paid attention to me. And like, I kind of had moments of like, you know, really difficult, you know, separation from friends and stuff. And I wonder if I actually shot myself in the foot, like you were saying, Chris, like you, maybe you mess with this shit, you bring bad luck to yourself and you end up screwing yourself over for years because you did some stupid spell on a curiosity whim or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. And real quick, I've always wanted like the powers of like Goku.
Oh, hell yeah.
And the older I get, I don't know if y'all watch Dragon Ball Super or read the mangas. There's an arc called Goku Black.
No, I never heard of that.
Where there's essentially an evil Goku.
Ooh.
Yeah. And the older I get, the more I realize I can't have this fucking power because I turn into that bastard. I would not be your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Just punch holes in people's faces all the time. But yeah, I mean, who didn't do that? I'm going to be honest with you guys. I'm going to sound like an idiot right now. When I was like 10 years old and I watched Dragon Ball Z, I used to sit on the end of my bed at night and try to like manifest that power. Like I would try to like, you know, I want to go Super Saiyan.
And then after a week. You.
Please.
So, my whole high school years, I would wake up every single morning from freshman year to senior year trying to wall climb, trying to stick to a wall.
Will, what are you doing? You're just like throwing yourself.
I wanted to be Spider-Man so bad that, and I was so upset. Like, I'd have a bad day at school because I didn't stick to the walls.
Oh, no.
You'd be like, you don't understand, guys. With great power comes great responsibility.
And then you throw yourself at a wall.
Yeah.
You didn't do anything really intense, like try to get yourself bit by a spider, did you?
No, I was.
You had more sense than that.
Spiders, right? Okay. Right.
No, I actually remember when I was hanging out with the goth kids. They were like, you know, when you're younger, when you're in like when you're a freshman, remember how seniors were like so much older than you? Like they might as well have been in their like late 20s when you were in ninth grade. Like that's how much of a difference I remember the older kids being. And there was this one older kid who was hanging out around us and he like ran and threw himself up sideways on a gate or like a fence. And he actually like grabbed onto the fence with his hands and his feet locked into the fence and he like hung sideways. And I was like, I remember being blown away by that because it kind of was like a Spider-Man move. I don't know. That just reminded me of what you were just saying about that. But I feel like I'm so sorry. Well, we're getting off topic. I want to switch it back to you because you're the guest today. let's take it back to the next part of the crazy experience you had, which was the true exorcism of your cousin. And can you talk a little bit more in detail about the aspects of that, and what were the how intense was it for you, and just anything you can remember from that experience?
To me, it really wasn't intense. It was an eye opener, and the priest noticed that when he was doing everything, that, you know, somebody at my age, I shouldn't have been as wide-eyed with like a half smile on my face during all this. I think that part scared him more than him doing the exorcism. It was to the point to where even afterwards, he looked at me dead in the eye and said, "This never happened." And in my head, I'm like, "Bullshit, dude. I just watched it happen. You just opened up a plethora of questions that I have right now."
Yeah, that's like the worst thing you can tell someone, right? That's like, especially a kid. Yeah. "You never saw anything. Don't ask questions." The opposite's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like if he would have asked you, if he would have told you, "Do you have any questions?" 99% of us, when we're presented with that request, you can't really think of any questions on the spot.
Yeah.
So
I can see that. What was the so the dynamics? That's interesting that it wasn't intense, especially at that age. But what were the actual mechanics and dynamics of the exorcism? I think you said your cousin was 1 year old, which to me, that is one of the most fascinating aspects of this story or this experience, because I've never heard of an exorcism that young. Can you talk briefly? You mentioned in the last recording that we lost, but can you talk about, I think it was your grandmother who picked up on that. Can you talk about what she picked up on and why she believed that exorcism was necessary?
It was the fact that at 1 year old, you know, he was speaking Latin. That was the biggest thing. And her growing up Catholic, she obviously heard some Latin. I've only taken a few classes they forced us to do in sixth grade to get us interested in it, to try to take it into junior high, high school, which I wish now I would have. But I was never speaking it at the house around him or anything. So I don't know where he would have got it from, because nobody really knew Latin.
Plus 1 year old. I mean, that's awfully young to make complex sounds speaking like
right.
That.
And then, of course, there was like, he had some strength a 1 year old should have not have had.
What are we talking, like lifting like vacuum cleaners over? I'm just kidding.
I mean, he probably could have if he wanted to, but wow. There,
yeah.
I mean, this kid to this day, he's in his 20s. He's what I call that farm boy strength. Like, you know, they don't look like they're that strong until you see them lift up a bale of hay or throw it like 20 feet up in the air.
Yeah, got that grip, that crazy, unexplainable grip strength. Oh, my God.
Right.
He got the Spider-Man powers that you
want. Yeah, you transfer it to him by accident. The last question I had that I didn't get to ask before, but I think is important to ask is, did your grandmother ever share with the family what your cousin was saying in Latin, or did she just recognize the sounds of Latin and she didn't know what he was saying? Like, what are some of the words if she knew what he was saying?
She never talked about it. In fact, to this day, like, she will flat out deny that any of this ever happened. It was only into my 30s when I started being like, you know what? I'm going to talk about it. I don't care, because I witnessed it. It's part of my story. So this is what I got to say about it.
Yeah, that is true. And that's how I am. Like, I'm in my 30s too. Well, I just turned 33. And that's how I am with my personal story with what I dealt with growing up in that house. It's like, whatever. Like, for the longest time, you know, you keep it suppressed. But it comes to a point where it's like, you know what? I just have to let it out. Mm-hmm. I don't care if, like, people believe me or not. This happened to me, so it is what it is. And I always take the stance, I don't know if you share the similar stance, that maybe somebody can come along and debunk this scientifically. Because I would rather that happen than me having to accept that, you know, I probably had interactions with spirits or demons or whatever the hell you want to call them. And thinking about that is really, really freaking terrifying. Really terrifying.
Yeah, Will, how do you deal with that? Like, how, like... I mean, we talked about how these experiences were really formative, but it wasn't really frightening for you. It was more of an eye opener and driving curiosity. So maybe this is a good opportunity to, I mean, unless you have any other stories that you want to bring up that were really intense you want to share. But I'm curious to get your personal psychological perspective, like especially as you get older, like Chris was saying, you reflect back on these things in our middle, getting close to middle age, and we want to share them more or understand them better, and we try to remember them as much as possible. So in all of your studies and everything you've been delving into, do the things that you learn about, do you feel like it empowers you more to have more control, feel more safely about this sort of thing? Or is it kind of like the more cans of worms you open, the more terrifying and complex things get as you get older?
It should be more terrifying. I'm one of those people where I have realized in this field, I don't have that fight or flight response. I have no flight to it. It's always fight. So whenever I get that feeling that something's dark, I can't run away. No matter how scared I am on the inside, you'll never be able to tell on the outside. And if I do ever get scared, that's when everybody else should really worry.
That's when they should
run. What I say. Yeah. Right. Because there was a farmhouse in Indiana. It was haunted. They opened it up for public investigations where anybody could come investigate once a month. And my first weekend there was pretty exciting. My second weekend there was more intense. And the more and more I went, the more and more intense it got, because there was actually a supposed witch bound to the land with her death. And there was also a demon that was bound to that land. And it's on YouTube and stuff. There's some links to some videos and stuff on there. But after becoming a demonologist, this was the first place I've ever been that actually had a demon connected to it. So yeah, I just had to keep going, and keeping on going and keeping on dealing with this helped me build more mental strength to fight in that side of the paranormal, because like most people would be scared. Most people, I've seen people run from that building, like just take off, get in their car and take off, and they'll avoid going near it. I know that was kind of a long answer.
No, that's great, man. My wheels are turning. That's really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Shit, I don't think I could do that, to be honest with you. I'd probably be one of the people running out. But I did want to ask you, my wife's stepbrother over Thanksgiving, I'm not going to share his name, told me of this weird experience that he had. So apparently that the house that they live in right now, which they live down the street from us, is haunted. So he said that one night he was like scrolling through YouTube on his phone, just watching like whatever specific videos. I forget what he said it was. Might have been like cars or something like that. Then this random video showed up under recommended that was in like, it was a black background, but it had Latin like words on it. So out of curiosity, he taps on it, and the video is like 5 minutes long, and it's a black background, and it's just this like phrase in Latin being repeated over and over and over and over for about 5 minutes. And he found himself like inadvertently, like I guess I don't know what you would call it, but he just started chanting it randomly, and close to the end of the video he realized that he was doing that, and he like stopped himself, and then he closed out the video, he closed out YouTube, he's like, you know what, he got up from the couch, he's like I'm gonna go to bed now. So he's laying in bed, he looks up what it means, and it's, I can't remember what he told me verbatim, but essentially you welcome like demons or the devil into your home. So he says he goes to sleep, and around 3 a.m. he hears his front door slam like boom, and then something with a really deep voice shouts his name, at like someone screaming at the top of their lungs. So he runs downstairs, he doesn't see anybody there, the door's not open, he thought someone broke into the house, that someone that he knew or something like that, like broke into the house and screamed his name. But I was kind of curious like to get your perspective on that.
So the bad part about YouTube is there's people on there a lot that put a lot of these videos on there, and you honestly can't get away with them. You spend enough time on YouTube, they're going to pop up. So I personally do believe that it was something where they were just doing it enough to get him to do it, where he did invite something. I only say that because like my kids' mom does not let them get on normal media. So they're only allowed on YouTube Kids. All of a sudden I get a call. She's like, you need to talk to our oldest daughter. I'm like, why? She goes, talk to her. I was like, okay, what am I supposed to talk to you about? She goes, I was on YouTube Kids and this video came up that showed me how to put a spirit in my doll so my dolls could play with me. I was like, stop. Oh, wow. Stop right there. I was like, what was the name of the video? Send me a link and all this. And this lady was teaching you how to basically like conjure up a spirit or a demon or something. And basically you're creating your own Annabelle. I was like, don't ever do that. Please just promise me you will never try that. She's like, but I want my dolls to be alive. I was like, yeah, but you don't know what they're going to be alive with. It could be good. It could be bad.
Yeah. So roll the dice. just get a real friend.
So there's dark people who get these videos on YouTube and they'll pop up on anybody's feed.
Just to tack on to that, this is kind of maybe a mildly interesting story, but you guys might think more of this than I do. So I'm probably going to drive you guys like wild with this story and you're going to be like, oh, you have something going on. But so my wife's laptop, I got her this laptop for work and personal use, like in 2019. This is a really good laptop, except it, you know, I think that maybe my daughter, maybe she stood on it or something happened to it where the keyboard got a little bit damaged and I still need to fix it. But I think maybe 4 months ago or so, we had the laptop open on my wife's desk and she left it open like that. And then when she went back to it, she saw on the screen, there was this, she's like, she came to me. She's like, I think there's something wrong with my laptop. I think I have a virus or something. And she's like, come look at this. It's so weird. And then I go over and then there's a picture. Like if you guys have Windows, you go to the Windows logo, the icon in Windows 11 or the search bar, I mean, and when you click on the search bar, it'll allow you to search anything from your computer or the internet. And she showed me that there was this evil looking witch kind of like just, it looked like a demon picture on her screen. And I'm like, oh, that's so creepy. And then I look and I see that in the search bar, it's just filled with sixes, as many sixes as possible. And I, in that instance, the first thought I had was, oh my God, you got a virus on your computer. Like somebody, you know, created this virus to freak you out and upload this image or whatever. And I was trying to like delete the sixes. And every time I would try to delete them, the keyboard would go haywire and then they would come back. So I ended up I realized in that moment it wasn't a virus. It was the broken keyboard that was filling into the search bar and it pulled up something from YouTube that was like this evil looking image of like a demon-esque picture from a YouTube video. And I'm like, okay, this is, you know, your keyboard's broken. It got stuck on the sixes loading on the bar. What's your perspective? Do you think that's kind of just like a technical snafu that just happened to repeat the number six, like the issue on the keyboard was just around the number six? Or would you guys take that more seriously if that popped up on your laptop?
I wouldn't say that was probably just technical, but I kind of want to try it now. I want to just get on my search bar, just sit there and hold six and see if it'll pop up.
I just did that and I don't see the video anymore. I assume that YouTube's algorithm, like, you know, will research different things. But like, for me, it comes up as like some creepy red blotted YouTube video. But it does still link to creepy stuff.
So, Will, on your active journey, do people reach out to you for help or do you just do like paranormal investigations? So like, why don't you give us a quick rundown of like what you do as a demonologist?
I do a lot of paranormal investigations up until I am reached out to. People have reached out to me in the past. But some of the problem with that is people are afraid to reach out. They're afraid to talk about it. This kind of goes back to where, you know, you were a kid and it's just like, oh, it's just your imagination. So now as an adult, something's actually happening in their home. They don't know who to turn to. They can go to their church. Their church is like, oh yeah, ghosts don't exist and all that, you know? So they start to think that they're crazy when things could actually be going on. And then they get on Facebook or whatever, and they start looking up demonologists and stuff. And now that there's so many different paranormal shows, people are more aware of what these things are, these terms are. And I actually have also a lot of acquaintances I met doing this. So they'll contact me. It's like, hey, could you help these people? And I'll be like, yeah, that's my number one thing, is I would rather be helping people in their homes than paying buttloads of money to go to some of these amazing places to investigate that's been investigated a million times over. Because I remember feeling that helplessness when I was seeing ghosts and nobody would believe me. Nobody would talk to me about it. I just want these people to know that there are people like me out there who are willing to listen, who are willing to believe you, but who are also going to question, because we have to be sure. There's a very thin line between something that's actually demonic happening or like some type of mental disorder like depression or something like that.
So when you do get reached out to and you're like, okay, I'll look into it, you know, I want to help these people, what do you find that's mostly the case? Do you find that it's, you know, sometimes it's really a demon or like some sort of haunting, or is it mainly commonplace that there's some sort of psychological/mental issue going on from what you've encountered?
It's mostly just hauntings and something such psychological. About 78% of demonic cases are actually psychological. A true demonic case is very rare, but hauntings are high and attachments are very high. Kind of like a family I had to help in, well, here in Ohio. I was living in Indiana at the time, but I had to come to Ohio to help a family who was being tormented. They moved to Ohio from Arizona because they were being tormented there and they wanted to get away from it. And I was like, okay, this is just going to be like a bunch of children's imaginations going wild, and the parents believe them, so their imaginations are going wild. This is going to be an easy case. And it really wasn't, because there was something really dark in that house. I don't think it was full on demonic, but it was something that was being caused by the mom's brother, before I finish that. So the team I was with when we did this, we actually were invited to stay in the home while investigating. And it was over Labor Day weekend. So we stayed Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, and left on Monday. And we would catch the uncle, who claimed to be a very devout Christian who would only read the Bible, talking to a mirror in his bedroom every night. I was trying to talk to him about it, question him about it as politely as I could, but then I had to tell the mom, it's like, your brother is actually conjuring something up, something from the other side from that mirror. All your problems are because of him. I don't know if he knows what he's doing is good or bad, but it's not good. So once we got all that taken care of, everything was fine in that house for a little while.
And that's why I have a fear of used mirrors. Quick story, which you guys will get a massive kick out of this. This was probably 3 years ago. I think this was like pre-COVID.
I remember this story.
Yeah. So my mother-in-law and my wife go to either a flea market or an estate sale. And my wife comes back with this big ass mirror. And I walk into the house and I see it laying on the side. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? She's like, oh, it's really nice. It's so pretty. I'm going to hang it up in this place. I'm like, no, you're not. I'm like, you don't know what energy that contains. You need to get that out the fucking house right now. And I picked it up and put it on the porch, and we put it in the trash. I don't know if someone took it, but yeah, that's how I am. I'm like that with rocking chairs too. Like, our neighbor tried to give us a rocking chair. I'm like, fuck that shit. The last thing I need is I'll be downstairs playing like FIFA or Madden or something, and I look over to my right and the chair is rocking back and forth and all the cats are upstairs and the dogs are sleeping on the couch. No, thank you. I don't need that type of crap.
I just picture, Chris, like it's like a movie where like your wife is so like sweet and gentle. She brings something home like, look what I got, honey. And then you just cut scene to outside your house and you just see the shit fly out the door and smash on the street.
Dean, did you have any questions about Will's demonology efforts or?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's interesting you bring up the mirror, because I have one more anecdote that I want to share that people might find interesting. So my wife, her family is actually Vietnamese, and her mom and dad are from Vietnam. Like they grew up in Vietnam and came over here in later in life, but they're actually Buddhist. And what I find fascinating, there's actually a lot of spillover between religions and stuff like that, and beliefs and about spirits and how to prevent bad spirits or you know, bad things from either bad spirits coming to you or bad things happening to the spirits of your loved ones. And one of the things that they did, I actually was with my wife. I was dating her at the time, but her grandmother had passed away, I think maybe like 2017 or 2018, not too long ago. But her parents actually they either covered up the mirrors or they would put tape to put an X out on the mirror. And I just found that so fascinating. I'm like, well, I asked my wife, like, why do they do that? It's like, oh, it's a Buddhist tradition. Or it's a tradition to where you put up a marker or you put a cover on a mirror to make sure that the spirit of one of your loved ones doesn't accidentally go get trapped into the mirror. And maybe this might be interesting, but like, let's get Will, can we get your perspective? Cause you just had that story about the guy chanting to the mirror and you said that this is the cause of the issues that the family was having. So what about mirrors have you learned about, you know, that has a connection to the spiritual side? Can I get your scientific perspective on it? Like the actual mirror itself, the fact that it reflects, and like, what is your spiritual understanding of why a mirror can draw or bring over spirits to the other side?
I'm not sure why they can, but I can tell you for a fact that they can. And the one thing that scares me the most in this world is actually mirrors, after doing a lot of research. On most investigations, you'll hear people who's seasoned in the paranormal field, where if they see two mirrors facing each other, they won't go in that room because that creates a portal to something else for some reason. And you can actually even feel a change in energy going from a room that doesn't have those to a room that has it. But also the movies, there's a couple of movies, Skeleton Key, where they were doing like hoodoo and they would trap somebody's soul in a mirror and then transfer it into somebody else.
Yes.
That's apparently, they believe in that. The Haitians believe in that a lot. Not to reference a bunch of movies.
Please. True. Yeah. We love them. We love movies. Yeah.
With Constantine, with I was about to say John Wick with Keanu Reeves, yeah. Where he traps the demon in a mirror. They actually do that, just like in the movie Mirrors with Kiefer Sutherland. You know, they performed an exorcism on that woman and trapped all the demons that was inside her in the mirror, because an exorcist don't even know, once he gets the demon out of this person, where it's going to go. He doesn't know if it's going to go straight back to hell. He may think he does, but there's a chance that it's still free roaming. That's why anybody who's close to that person whenever they're doing an exorcism has to be with that person, not only for the fact for spiritual help and loving help from the family, but the fact that it can move from that person to another family member. And if you're all already there, then, you know, you'll be able to spot it in that same room. But I mean, even in paganism, I did an investigation at this one place. I was supposed to actually, when this place closed, I was supposed to get the mirror that was there. So they had a mirror at this place that hung above the fireplace, where the previous owner practiced heavily in black magic, but they knew what they were doing. This was his scrying mirror. And it got to the point where he felt like he needed to hurt more people, but he knew he wasn't going to be able to get away with it in his physical form. So he committed suicide in front of this mirror, and his soul was trapped in the mirror. I've actually got a picture of it. I wish I had all the pictures I've taken of it, but there's a picture of it I've got of his soul in this mirror. And like I said, when this place closed, I was supposed to get a hold of that mirror, but I've never heard from the owner since. And I was willing to pay them a crap ton of money for this mirror. But they also believe that I was the only one who could have this mirror that would know how to deal with the spirit inside that couldn't go to anybody else.
Can I ask you a question? Why not, if you know it's evil and you know that it can hurt other people, why not just break it? Would you let the thing loose and like just take it to a field and break it in the middle of nowhere?
Actually, yes. Rigs- so if you break it, it breaks the containment. So it's just like opening a cell door.
Okay. That's so fascinating. It kind of seems like a bad decision on the person's part. They were trying to do something to, I mean, I imagine like if that actually worked, if you got trapped in a mirror, you don't know what that's going to be like. You can pretend to believe and understand and know everything that you could possibly want to know that's going to happen after that happens. But what if you get into the mirror and it's just like, you can't do anything. You're trapped. You want someone to break it to get out. It's like you kind of just shoot yourself in the face. That's such a fascinating concept too, because you were saying that some demonologists or people who are on the good side wanting to help people, they trap demons and spirits and mirrors who are bad. Yet you have another story of someone who's practicing black magic, wants to hurt people. He also decides to trap himself in a mirror, which seems like kind of like shooting yourself in the foot to me. But yeah, I kind of digress about the mirror thing. But this is kind of just a random interesting fact that I just found out about mirrors. Is did you know that if you stand in a mirror and you are always, no matter how close or far away from it you are always 50% or whatever object is in the mirror is always 50% exactly of the actual mass or size in real life. No matter if you stand in the back of a room or if you get up right close to it. And you could watch YouTube videos of this, like the explanation of this, but I don't know the light mechanics and all that stuff of why that works. I'm sure there's all kinds of scientific explanations about how light travels and reflects and goes into our eyes and stuff like that. But there's the last anecdote I wanted to share about mirrors is I watched another video that showed, I think it's a Hindu an Indian tradition about making mirrors. Like they still do this to this day where there's like the practice of making pressed and polished mirrors out of solid metal. And I would be fascinated to find out the difference between how someone who believes in the spiritual side and mirrors, how the actual, like how mirrors are today, they're like glass, right? Or some kind of form of glass. But then there's also examples of mirrors that are metal. So I wonder if to someone who is practicing this thing, if they work in the same way, but that's just the nerd in me kind of going off on a tangent. I apologize. I guess the last question I'll ask Will is, do you have any other really, what's the most, if you could pick one story of your time as a demonologist and your interaction, if you can share it, what's the most intense, crazy experience that was just bar none, head and shoulders above any other experience, if you've had something like that? Or maybe you could just share a couple smaller examples if you don't have such an example.
And I have one final question too after you answer Dean's question.
Okay. So yeah, after I became a demonologist, it was at this farmhouse I was talking about earlier, dealing with this demon there was nothing really intense or anything up until this one night when we were doing what's called they call it something else now, but when I was doing it, it was called the Ganzfeld experiment, where you sit in a chair blindfolded with headphones on, noise canceling headphones, just pumping white noise into your ears. And then people around you would ask questions, and the person blindfolded in the chair is supposed to listen to the static for answers. And so you ask the question very low so that you're not going above what the noises in their ears, and the spirit's supposed to give them the answer. This one girl opened herself up so much doing this that I literally, during this whole exercise, I watched her go from her normal self to starting to be possessed. And I had to pull her out of the chair, and everybody left for a while. she stayed behind with me and she's staring at the chair and she's like, I want to go again. I was like, why do you want to go again? She's like, I don't know. I just feel like I need to go again. I feel like something was trying to reach me that I need to go back and see what it was. I was like, do you feel safe enough to do this? Do you know how not to open yourself up so much? She told me she did. I shouldn't have believed her. So I let her back in the chair and I watched her once again, but even quicker, go from being herself to possessed. And I had to do a minor rite of exorcism and just like right there. And that night also, because after we got her out of the chair, nobody else came back into the house except for one of the two guys that owned it. So it was just me and him sitting in. I was sitting in the chair where she got possessed. He was sitting in a recliner. He fell asleep. And once he fell asleep, there's steps right across from where I was sitting that went upstairs. I could see long, dark, shadowy fingers come from the doorway from that staircase. And I got to see my first demon with my very own eyes that night. And it was the first time I actually wanted to run, but he was blocking my exit and I didn't want to run through him because I was afraid if I ran through him, part of him is going to be in me. So I just stood there or sat there, too afraid to stand up, but I just kind of leaned in and stared back at him. And then the other guy finally just, he was kind of in a slumber, but he finally kind of woke up and the demon dissipated. And from what I can understand, that demon has only shown itself to three people. Once to me, once to my ex, and once to one of her friends when we did the very last investigation at this place before it shut down.
So was the demon that you saw affixed to, do you think it was affixed to yourself or something around you, or was it only affixed to the place? Because you said you saw it multiple times, or people saw it multiple times or different times.
So this demon wasn't what I call a Christian demon. It was a pagan demon. From what I could research, the video that's on YouTube, I've actually talked to the guy who was possessed, but the video that's on YouTube when he was possessed, when they were asking him, what's your name? He said, I am seven. And to me, I was like, why would he say I am seven? Why wouldn't he say we are seven? So that led me down a road of researching. And that's when I found out this wasn't a Christian demon, because if it was a Christian demon, it would have said we. Finding out that since there was a witch that was bound to this land when she was killed, witches can create a demonic entity to help them in death. But in order to do so, they had to draw out like a seven-pointed star. So that's where I was like, okay, so that's possibly where he got his name from, was the star, because it has 7 points. So it was just one entity with that. But I also think it was the fact that the more I went there, the more he wasn't able to feed on the energy of all these investigators, because I was always there to stop it. And he wasn't liking that. So when I wasn't there and other people were like actually paid to investigate there and getting spiritually harmed and stuff, they were like, he was getting stronger. He was basically feeding off them and he was coming at me. Like if I drive by that place, even today, I have such an anxiety attack and there's always something sitting in the back seat of my car when I'm driving by it, and then I'll have nightmares. But also every single investigation I go on since then, I will get on recording or something the name Seven to this day. And I haven't been there in 6 years.
Wow, that's terrifying that it seemingly affixed you. I'm so sorry. You're opening so many questions and can of worms. And Chris, I know you have a question, but I promise I only have two more questions. So the second question, the other question I wanted to ask was, do you feel, it's okay if you don't feel comfortable doing this because you still have like seemingly a connection to the pagan demon, but what did it look like? Did you see the whole figure? How tall was it? Like, can you describe it? You just saw the fingers or?
No, I saw like at first I saw the fingers and it was pulling itself through the doorway. It's very hard to describe, but I can say it had to be 20 feet tall. and it was hunched over because, you know, the old houses had high ceilings and everything. It was taller than that. So it was hunched over.
So face, it's like something you've never seen, like nothing comparable. Yeah.
Right. It was just very tall and lanky. You can see where the rib cage and everything are supposed to be. It was like a tight film of what should have been skin. And then it was just really skinny, like almost to the bone, the spinal cord.
Emaciated. Yeah.
Like I found a picture of something that come closest to what I could describe it. I keep it saved on my phone just so when I talk about it, people are like, well, what it looked like? It's like, well, I can't describe it, but this comes the closest I could find to what I saw.
When I hear stories like this, I think it's so interesting because it is a demon or whatever, it has human form. So that's so fascinating. Like, I don't know, it's kind of like riffing and being, probably way too out there, but like when we talk about aliens and stuff, we always wonder, like, why do aliens look like humans? They're like bipedal, they have two eyes and what, like, you know, but you're saying it had skin, it had a rib cage, so it had the form of a human. And that's so interesting to me that something would take the form of a human. Maybe it was like a human before that, or maybe it's just trying to mimic human form for whatever reason.
I think it tries to mimic.
Okay. Like copying. Yeah.
Right.
Like maybe it's not really its true form.
Like JJ says, like these things are preternatural. Is that the word? Preternatural. They never existed in the human realm and were never human. So I think they'll always take a bastardized version of a human form. And the emaciated stuff and being really tall just made me think of the Wendigo, but I don't want to go down that rabbit hole.
Don't go down that road. You don't want to go down that road. And then the last question I wanted to ask that I also find fascinating is, so you consider yourself in the Christian vein and you know, you get your do you get your power to stand up and help people with demons? Do you think you get your power from the Christian, or like, you know, your perspective of Christianity, like God and Jesus and stuff? Is that where your, or does your power come from your knowledge? Because the reason why I ask this is because you say you were dealing with a demon that was pagan, so it's just so crazy to me that you could think about multiple layers of the other side. It's like, if you have a pagan demon who doesn't follow or believe in other religions, it only affixes itself to whatever incantation or belief system that the pagan witch brought it out or created it with. Like, so it seems to me that the natural logic is that it wouldn't succumb or turn away from, like, say, a priest who is solely grounded within the Christian faith. It seems like there are demons out there that just wouldn't have list. Like, if you found a demon in Hindu culture and you tried to do an exorcism with Christian structure, would it have no effect on it? Like, where does the power come from that you get to deflect demons from other, that are part of, or from other religions like paganism?
I believe my power or ability or whatever comes from the belief in myself. When I first started demonology, it was through the Catholic Church. And then I'd start finding out that other religions also believe in dark entities, I would say, because they all don't call them demons. They all have different names for them, like jinn and stuff like that. So I try to study as much as I can on other religions. And I am so glad I met JJ because he helps so much with that. I talk about this a lot when I go to paracons and stuff. Before I go into somebody's home and do anything, I ask what their religious preference is, because I'm not going to go to a pagan's house and do a Christian rite of exorcism on their home to bless it or something, because I believe it's not going to help their home. I believe it's not going to help them. I'm going to use a pagan way to help them because that's their belief system. It's their home. I can only push the dark spirit out. They have to be able to keep that door shut and lock it. It's just like with a Christian. I'm not going to go into a Christian's home and start saging and smudging and stuff like that, even though sage does not work on demons. People who believe that are just, they need to do a little bit more research.
Like vampires and garlic.
right. But like, yeah, I'm going to go into a Christian home with holy water in a list of prayers that I got from the Catholic Church. I'm going to use their belief systems to do things in their house. That way, their belief helps strengthen their spiritual bond in their house to keep their family safe.
Yeah. So what's interesting about your answer there, Will, with, you know, I'm going to go into holy water in a Christian home. If it's like they're pagans, I'm going to, you know, do the pagan way to help them out. I think some, I guess, folks might not like that answer because it's kind of giving validity to other beliefs. You know what I mean?
They don't like that answer at all.
Yeah, I always found that curious, like, because you mentioned jinn, and jinn are not really, well, of course, like, I have some family members that are Muslim, and they don't really consider jinn to be demons.
Yeah, they're
more so, they're created from smokeless fire, so God created angels, man, and the jinn, so they're like, they consider them to be like another entire type of entity. So What you mentioned there in general, I always wondered, like, if an Islamic exorcism would work, you know, for maybe a Catholic person that's possessed by a demon. I've always wondered how those different planes of existence is, you know, intertwined with one another. Is it all one plane, or does each faith have its own plane of belief and existence? I don't know if you guys ever played the God of War series, but that's kind of how they do it. Like, Greece has like the Greek gods, and the Nordic lands have like Thor and Freya and Odin and Loki, and Egypt has Anubis and Osiris. So it kind of sounds like, would you say that's kind of the case based off of belief, or am I just thinking a little too much into that?
No, I think it's based off belief. It all, like, it's, faith, no matter what it is such a wide spectrum that comes from one thing. But it's just, you know, somebody in the original belief didn't like something or another, so they changed it to what they believed. And then somebody in that group didn't like it, so they changed it to what they believe. Because if you do a little research and stuff, you will find out that every religion is basically, they have the same beliefs. They have the same stories. It's just with their own gods, or I don't want to say actors, because that was just like, that would piss off so many people. Like, you know, like what you said, the Norse with Ragnarok, it's basically the same thing as Revelations with Christianity. But if you do more research, Ragnarok supposedly has already happened. The Norse gods are dead, but there's one god that survived who was supposed to create life all over again out of two different trees, who is Ash and Elm, like Adam and Eve. But they also believe that Loki survived it, who turns into snakes, play tricks on people. There's your Garden of Eden story right there.
Yeah, keyword, Apple of Edom.
Yeah.
Yep, there's the overlap there. But, Will, we've been going for quite a while here. We're pushing almost an hour and a half. And from the previous recording, another 30 minutes. So I think I got one final question. And, Dean, I'll throw it back to you to see if you have any final thoughts. I wanted your perspective on Ouija boards.
So I'm one of those people, I do not believe Ouija boards open portals. In the movie Insidious, the lady there says, and I highly, highly believe in this with all my being, when you communicate with the dead, they all hear you. So any form, this is why Christians don't like people going out and trying to talk to the dead. They consider it necromancy and stuff like that. Any form of communicating with the dead is dangerous, whether you're using a Ouija board or a digital recorder. The difference is with the Ouija board, for it to actually work, the spirit doesn't move the pendulum. Somebody has to open themselves up enough for the spirit to possess your hands to move the pendulum, because they can't physically do it. So you're opening yourself up to possession. So if there's something there, you can't hear it. They could say that it's your dead grandma or something, but you can't hear the voice behind what that is. So when you're opening yourself up for them to move the pendulum, you're opening yourself up to full possession. That's why possessions happen a lot more with Ouija boards than anything else. With the digital recorder, you can hear a voice. Even though they can imitate dead relatives and stuff like that, they'll fuck up eventually. And you'll be able to hear, they'll say something that you're like, oh no, this isn't who I'm talking to. Or you'll hear their real voice in something that they say.
Dean, did you have any final questions before we let Will go today?
No, I think like this has been fantastic. Like, I can't believe how much really solid content that we got from this. Like, this has been one of my favorite discussions, with a third person. Thanks so much for sharing your stories and your time. You're really well-spoken, and I appreciate you sharing your stories with us. Do you have anything else you want to add?
I just
close out.
I thank you guys for inviting me on. Like I said, I heard you guys on JJ's podcast and then went and checked out yours, and I just absolutely love it. I love how like each week you guys could reference something. You just end up coming back to the week prior and everything. And every time I hear it, man, I can't debunk anything that you went through when you were younger, Chris. Every time I hear it, it's like,
sorry, man.
I know. Keep saying it every time you're like, somebody debunked this. I'm sitting there, I'm constantly wrecking my brain, and it's like, you can't.
I'm begging for someone to be debunk it. I just want it to be like not real. Yeah, well, I also want to say thank you for coming on. I hope we didn't traumatize you too much today, because I know we were bantering on JJ's Discord. You know, JJ sent telling us to traumatize you. So you hear that, listeners? Will was our first listener guest that came on and shared his stories, and we think he had a fun time.
Oh, I did.
So so that's an open platform for any of you listeners out there that have stories or, you know, anything like that, that you experiences that you want to share with us. You could be a guest, or you could send us your story and we'll just dedicate an episode to you. You know, we love interfacing with the community. This was really awesome. But why don't you plug for a little bit? Why don't you tell the listeners where they can find you?
Well, I'm on Facebook at Paranormal Will. I'm also on Snapchat. For some reason, they shut my Instagram down and I can't get that back. I was on TikTok as Paranormal Will, but then I stopped it and I'm trying to get it back up because my daughter secretly got herself a TikTok because she found it. And I was like, okay, so that account's still open. I don't know why I can't. I know the password, but they won't. But anyways, I'm digressing from that. On TikTok, I'm Demonologist Will. And I just started that back up today. So I got to fill that thing back up with stuff.
Again, everyone, I want to thank Will for being on. And remember, folks, always rag on the hag. Thanks for tuning into today's episode of The Wandering Road. You can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, and most podcast platforms. Be sure to subscribe and share. Also, don't forget to give a follow on Instagram at @twroadpodcast and follow my TikTok at @twrpodcast. Take care, and I'll catch you on the next one.